Accession number 10436, rule 5.
This is what Netsky, rule 5.
So it was a very mixed up business. It's usually that if you fight in a house or a bigger building. Eventually we took it. We took some prisoners, a lot of arms and ammunition. But because the units which were on our left and on our right didn't proceed as far forward as we did, we had to stop, especially as the Germans counterattack with tanks, where we held the counterattack, but we got the orders to leave the place, which we did. What happened? Then we returned. Then question of spoils arrived, because we got, as I say, a lot of arms, ammunition, machine guns, another mortar, and of course, being the lord and master of company, I was already company commander then, I decided who is going to get what. So it means the bulk, of course, went to my men. Then the battalion commander of the 3rd battalion arrived, and of course, being a major, and me, still 2nd lieutenant, of course, it wasn't quite what he expected. He expected to do it himself. I sent the... So he said, "Are you going to be court-martialed?" So I said, "Yes, sir." Oh, we had a strong discipline. We were a regular army. We sort of looked at the other units in town, especially in center. It was less discipline. We had a real pre-war army discipline. So I said, "Yes, sir." And I sent a little runner to my battalion commander. And he sent me a little note, unsigned. "Keep arms, nothing else." So I just laughed. Anyway, so we didn't give anything back. And I had a report in front of the colonel. He was a fiery fellow, but we admired him very much. He was a first-class officer. He had a beautiful chart from the 1939. So he said, "Oh yes, explanations." So I said, "Well, sir, I am the officer of the 1st, I had to say something, from the 1st battalion, that I was only attached to the 3rd battalion." And he just looked at me, he said, "You do talk twaddle," and laughed. Anyway, he said, "You'll get my decision in due course." So salute, off I went. 3 days later, I got a bit of paper. 3 days, house arrest, after the end of fighting. And motivation, he did the best for his unit. So off I went back to him to report. I said, "Thank you very much for decoration, sir." He said, "Get out." So that was that story. Later on, I got promotion, just before the end of the fighting, to lieutenant. Then one night, after a strong, very, very heavy fighting in Dolna Street, with my 3 platoons, were put on the front line on the other side of Puławska from this school, which was our southern point. We arrived late in the night, late at night, and I asked my boys to do a bit of more digging, because the unit which was in front, we took the position over, didn't do it very well, so we sort of dug to about 3 o'clock in the morning, and then we went to accept the duty lot. We went to sleep. I slept in a little church, they keep the bodies, it's a crypt. It wasn't really a crypt, because it was the same level. It wasn't underneath. It was just a room for when they bring the bodies for a funeral, it stays there. Anyway, it's not very important. And at 5 o'clock in the morning, Stukas came over us, of our position. And the war started. 5:30, the artillery opened up on all Mokotów, because we attacked from all four sides. But the main attack came on my front. And the infantry was elements of SS Hermann Göring Panzer Division, and tanks. Well, I lasted till 10 o'clock. I sent the runner to my battalion commander. He was on the other side of Płaska Street, which is a very broad street. It's about twice of the width of, say, Oxford Street. And a few minutes later, somebody reported that he's lying dead in the middle of the street. So I sent the other runner, telling him to go back, further back. No, everywhere the earth was going up and down, was black. And well, he didn't return. So, of course, I had to go. I gave the command to my second in command, and I ran through that. It was in front of our position in the school, about 20 to 50 yards ahead, was a big ditch with anti-tank ditch through the across the street. And the German tanks were there, and the infantry. But the infantry was coming against me from the side of it, from my left side, and from the escarpment, because there is an escarpment quite, 100 yards? Something like that. And they were coming already from there, so I was attacked from two sides, really. So I got to the school, and in the cellars was again the same 3rd battalion commander, and he had the reserves there and my 4th platoon. So I asked him to give me back my platoon and ask him for anti-tank weapon, because our Piats and Panzerschrecks, which I'll explain what it is if you want me to, were destroyed by German artillery fire. Well, he refused to give me any men, but he gave me a crew of Piat crew, and I ran with them, and I sighted them on the side of this road to against the tanks, and in that moment I was shot by a sniper, shot through. Got it here.
Through your chest.
Yes, through here, come out there. I lost conscience. Well, my men and women, actually, we as the only unit in Mokotów, we have one woman in the line, a young girl. Her family was murdered by Germans, and she started sort of washing socks for the boys and cleaning the quarters. And then when the time came, she was a Red Cross girl. And then during this fighting, he took somebody who was killed or wounded, I don't know, his submachine gun, and joined the line. She's alive, she's in Poland. And she arranged, as I was told now, for two boys wounded, walking wounded, and two girls to carry me through all this hell, and it was hell. And they carried me to a place next to this school on the other side of the street. And then I became conscious again. The funny part of it was that in about an hour later, a nurse, the girl from the hospital came in and said, "Are you company commander, 3rd one?" I said, "Yes." And he gave me a sort of bloody bits of paper and a tuppenny halfpenny watch and said, "Oh, this is from one of your men. He just died." Which didn't terribly help me. Anyway, then I had to definitely go to a place to relieve myself. And they carried me, sort of stood me against. And, of course, it was red. So I said, as a doctor, son, of course, I made a quick diagnosis. Bleeding inside, well, another hour or two, that would be end. And, you know, it didn't really worry me that much.
You were just fatalistic.
Yes, I just accepted. You saw so many next to you people dying that you just accepted it. And, of course, later on I learned they gave me anti-tetanus injection, and that's what made it red. Anyway, during this time, when this fighting began, a lot of our boys who were walking wounded, not too badly wounded, escaped from field hospitals and joined the unit. And two of them and two girls again came and said, well, I could hear the fighting was in this school, inside the school. So they said, oh, we'll take you from here because it's a bit dangerous. So they carried me. And they wanted to carry me to the pre-war hospital, big hospital, which was already bombed by Germans. As soon as we put a Red Cross on the roof, that was deadly. And I said, no, take me to my company, when the company was billeted. Nothing will happen to you. I don't know why I said it. I must have been a bit dozy, dopey, whatever you want. And they believed me, and they carried me, and they left me there. Later on, I was carried to a cellar, put on the concrete, and full of blood. And from then, I was taken to an unfinished building, cellars of an unfinished building. And must be next day. The fighting started and stopped on the 27th. So it must have been a night and day in between when I was wounded and when the fighting started. Just before the fighting started, a runner came in and he said, the colonel said, can you dress yourself? But yourself, as the officer's word that you do it yourself, if so, you take your walking wounded through the sewers to the center of Warsaw. And I did dress myself. I have an army, you know, like a high...
Puttees?
No, boots. Boots, like a riding. And so I did. And then I got up in the fresh air, and the anti-aircraft gun, which was used as an ordinary gun by Germans, was boom, 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 boom. And I got, that was the only moment of all that, I must say, when I really got frightened. I really sort of held to the wall for, it went after, say, 30 seconds, but I was really, really frightened. Anyway, I hobbled to the point when I was to collect my wounded, walking wounded, and we got into the queue. As I wasn't very well, they laid me down, and we said, I'll pick you up when it's the time to go to the sewers. And we went to the sewers. I have never been before in the sewer, and it was hell. I don't remember very much of it. All I know, it was 16 hours. We actually went to the end, was just a wall, was end of the sewer. I was walking, met in the sewer, the signals company commander, and we went to the back, to the end, and then we started returning. And when we were returning in the sewer, we saw a man standing back to us, and then he turned, and he first saw me. Well, his brother was a platoon commander, was killed in action, and he came to see me asking if the body has been recovered. And this is why he remembered me. And he looked at me and he recognized me. And he said, oh, Lieutenant, what are you doing here? And then he recognized his company commander because he was signaled, platoon commander. And he said, well, we're trying to get out from here. So he said, all you have to do is to pick up from the bottom of the sewer, telephone cable, and that will take you to Warsaw. And this is how we got out. We got out in Aleje Ujazdowskie, yeah? You probably know it, in the sewer. And there is a very high sewer, is very high there, so I was helped up. And I took several of the men got lost, but several did come up with me. Some parts of sewer was such that you have to crawl. If you see in the film,
Canal,
yes, it was like that. The fellow was walking. The madman was walking. The colonel who was lying with all his decoration was there. The girl was shouting and screaming, and the bodies were down there, and we were walking on them as the people who were overcome by fumes, because Germans were not only put hand grenades hanging from the sort of little barricades they put up, they throw some kind of gas as well. Anyway, we got out, and I sort of, in the fresh air, I felt a bit better and asked two of them to take me to the officer who is in charge of this place. And I went to him, and I must say he wasn't very helpful. What I wanted him to organize from the people who has been some time and have time to recover, a patrol to go and get people, because behind us were hundreds of people still. Anyway, what happens? Afterwards, some of my boys said, oh, we'll go. And they did. And they brought about 100 people from the sewers. And I think it was one of the bravest things I can think of. Going 16 hours through that hell after a 2 hours rest, going back again to bring people. Later on, I was transferred to a field hospital in Warsaw Marszałkowska near Plac Zbawiciela. And that was that, except when I started walking a few days later, I don't remember how I got there. If somebody, probably they helped me to the other side of Marszałkowska, to the Ogród Saski. And I was standing there and talking to somebody, and the German officer appeared. That was already ceasefire. And he came in, he saluted, and asked he can have a look. He was a Wehrmacht officer. We saluted. And he said, it's a ceasefire. I said, yes. And he looked at me, you know, I have a bandage. I still have my undershirt here with blood. And he said, can he look our positions? So we said, no, you can walk here. And the fellow who is in charge of this part of our defense came, and he said, oh, I'll give you a soldier. You can walk around, but not exactly to see our positions, because it's only ceasefire. We don't know what's going to happen. He was very polite, this German officer, and he said, I admire your courage. It's very nice of him. And that was it. And later on, I was asked if I'll go to field hospital. And as I have several of my men walking wounded, with, you know, I could count on finding them where they were or where with me, I decided to walk. And then we walked through near the Polytechnic school, university, really. We walked out of Warsaw to a temporary camp. And then we were transported 50 or 60 men to a cattle truck to a place called Łambinowice. On the way in Częstochowa, I was told that it was green, yellow, black, and whatever you like. And so the boys started bashing, you know, knocking on the
sides.
And then the door opened. There was 5 SS men with submachine guns and the young SS officer. So he asked what happened. So the boy said, well, our commanding officer is green, yellow, and black. So he had a look, sort of look at me and said, well, get him out. So they got me out on the grass by the thing, and he said, I'll come back to when the train moves. That was at Częstochowa. Well, about 50 yards from that were German guards, you know, a few of them, and crowds of people. Well, first was all quiet, and then people started throwing cigarettes and food. First, the SS men were throwing it back, but then they started throwing it in. You know, I said, all right, boys, you soldiers, we soldiers, sort of spirit. I don't know why, but it does exist sometimes. So the boys had cigarettes and a bit more food. And this officer also promised me to send a doctor. And he did. The doctor and Red Cross girl arrived, and the doctor looked at that. Was part of bandage was paper, of course. Nothing else was left. And he said, no, I better not touch it. There's nothing I can do for you, really. I have no real medicine. Are you in pain? I said, well, not too bad. So if you can stand it, it's... I haven't got any morphine or anything to help you, even if you were in a great pain. I wasn't. And the girl said to me, if you give me your address, somebody, you know, family out of Warsaw, I'll try to contact them. So I gave her this name of my aunt's sister, which lived in Włochy outside Warsaw. And about 20 minutes, half an hour later, the officer came and said, very sorry to me, and, you know, it was very, very, very polite, very 100% Geneva Convention and more. And they got me back there, and off we went to a place called Łambinowice.
Whereabouts is it?
Now it's in Poland, in Silesia. That was a stalag. And they stopped us there. When we stopped there, a lot of us have sticks, you know, because couldn't people wounded legs, and I had a stick as well. And the German guards who took over started taking it off and started, they got very rough, and the fighting started. We wounded, and they with rifles and what, you know, some machine guns, but it could have been nasty. But an officer came running and started shooting, stop, 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 they're not Yugoslavs, they're not Tito partisans, they're Poles. And that stopped it. And we were marched to the camp. Before we were marched to the camp, we were stopped on the open field and robbed of everything which we had. I managed to get through my father's case, cigarette case, which I'll show you later. And then it was raining, pouring with rain, so we stayed all night. And about 10 o'clock in the morning, they marched us into the camp. There were Yugoslavs there, French, Russians were away, and there were some Polish, few Polish prisoners of war from 1939. One of them was a doctor, and they later on took me for an X-ray. And we stayed in this camp for a bit, and then we were transferred by train. The arrangement was that we were in one third, 16 officers, assorted officers from other ranks, and there was no question of saying, oh, I'm a soldier, I'm a private, you know, because they knew, they have their people in, you know, they managed to get their own people in between. And they said, oh, you're an officer, come on. And it was 16 of us. In one third was a barbed wire. On the other third was five guards. Well, we were lucky in my truck, because as soon as we stopped at any bigger station, two of these fellows ran and brought us hot soup. We were from Silesia, we were Poles. And so at the end, when we stopped this famous camp, Murnau, of Flag 7A, I think, the other three Germans were joking, say, why don't you go with them? And these two fellows said, well, if we were not treated as deserters, we would have gone with pleasure. We didn't have any doubts of the Deutschland kaput. And then, of course, with normal life in officers' camp. And in May, the Americans appeared around our this camp. So we slowly decamped. And it was possible to disappear a couple of days before Americans came. And they met nose to nose, the first American tank met nose to nose the SS column, which came to finish us off. They found all this. Of course, the tanks shot them up.
How did you know they were going to finish you off?
All this. We found all this on the body of the officer. He was in a car and two or three lorries of troops. And so that's what we heard. That was a special detachment. The other funny thing about it is the fellow in the first American tank, when he realized who you are, started shouting in Polish. He was a Polish-American. Another coincidence. Well, after that, I went to, as a courier, with letters and things to Lubecka, which was another camp for a car. And I found some of my boys, and we arranged.
Where is Lubecka?
Lubecka is in Germany, on the seaside, on the Baltic side. It was a big port. And then I returned, and I was called up to the 2nd Polish Corps. And then normal life. I found myself in tanks, 6th Armored Regiment, Dzieci Lwów, children of Lwów. And later on, with British troops, with 2nd Corps arrived in Glasgow, and then...
How were you received in Britain, you and your other Polish comrades?
Well, starting from Glasgow, the ladies with tea and coffee and what have you on the quay. Well, wasn't terribly hot, even in your